Hello, Cryptonauts, and welcome back to another episode of Cryptocurrency Chat. I'm your host, Jake Jeverly, with my co-host, Blockchain John, here on Sunday evening, May 14th, episode 515. Wow, it's really close. It's 514, and this is episode 515. How did that happen? Anyways, This is our last episode before we go to Blockchain Expo, and we, of course, will be streaming on the day of course, that evening. We will be at a really exclusive media-only event. So we'll probably stream it anyways. How's it going, John?
Good, good. Just like you mentioned, just focusing on this Blockchain Expo. Got a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, I'm excited.
Yep, excited too. Looking forward to it. Renting a Tesla to come down because my truck is in the shop. Anyways.
Yeah, buddy.
So we'll be cruising in a Tesla on the way over to the show. All right, let's get to the news here. Starting out with This Week in Crypto Twitter. Take it away, John.
This week on Crypto Twitter, Musk welcomes new Twitter CEO to get to X, the Everything app. The most important tweet on Crypto Twitter this week was an announcement on Friday by Twitter owner and CEO Elon Musk naming his replacement, Linda Yaccarino, as the platform's new chief executive. Musk will continue serving Twitter as CTO and the executive chairman. Yaccarino left her job as head of advertising at NBC Universal on Friday morning to take on the job of helping Musk transition Twitter into X, his envisioned Everything app that will incorporate social media and payments, possibly including crypto along the lines of China's WeChat.
Oh boy.
There we go. I know Meta's been trying to do that for a while, but they got slapped by the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
Musk is also pro-crypto. His electric car company, Tesla, is currently one of the largest institutional hodlers of Bitcoin, even after it sold three-quarters of its original holdings. He is a fan of Dogecoin, and his frequent tweets about it often pump the price. He even replaced Twitter's Bluebird logo with the Doge meme for a few days, so a potential crypto integration is conceivable, especially as a payment option. Elsewhere on Crypto Twitter this week, Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong kicked off things by praising the UAE for its clear rule book when it comes to crypto regulation. And here's that tweet from Brian. The UAE deserves a lot of credit for being forward-thinking on crypto, first dedicated crypto regulators in the world. A clear rule book published. Business-friendly plus strong customer protection. Really enjoying my visit so far. And as we mentioned in the past, Brian Armstrong and Coinbase are considering moving out of the States.
Yep.
All right, so continuing on, Coinbase is a publicly traded U.S. company, but the hostile domestic regulatory environment is driving it offshore. Mm-hmm. The company recently obtained a license to operate in Bermuda and used it to open an international exchange offering Bitcoin and Ethereum perpetual futures. It is also currently talking with the Financial Services Regulatory Authority, FRSA, a regulator of the Abu Dhabi Global Market, a crypto-friendly free economic zone in the UAE, about opening a regulated exchange there. Circle's EU strategy and policy director Patrick Hansen on Tuesday shared a chart showing just how MiCA is stealing the wind from U.S. sales. European Union lawmakers last month approved MiCA, or the markets in the crypto assets bill, which now means the bloc has a unified regulatory approach throughout its 27 member state, and licenses granted to crypto companies in one country can be passported to another member state. The rules on stablecoins comes into force in July 2024, while other requirements will not be enforced until January 2025. And there's a tweet there from Patrick Hansen. If you guys want to check that out, follow Patrick at Patty_Hansen. On Tuesday, U.S. President Joe Biden positioned himself against the MAGA House Republicans, aligned with, quote, wealthy crypto investors that look for loopholes to avoid paying taxes. POTUS's tweet was subsequently flagged by fact-checkers, who added the context that all crypto profits are subject to capital gains tax. Also that day, a video shared by MicroStrategy chair and institutional Bitcoin whale Michael Sadler. Sadler?
Sadler.
It literally says Michael Sadler there.
Yep.
Michael Saylor made the rounds. A keen and predictable Bitcoin
Acolyte.
Acolyte. Sailor says that Bitcoin's price will chop its way up with volatility forever.
Yeah, that's weird, because the D and the Y are not in the same place on the keyboard, so I wonder why they put Sadler instead of Sailor.
Yeah. Bitcoin mining revenue levels are now at the level they were at a year ago, according to a chart shared by Will Clemente. The co-founder of independent digital asset research firm Reflexivity Research. There's a tweet there from Will Clemente. The third. Stablecoin's issuer Tether's revenue is well over $1 billion, according to its Q1 2023 attestation. This means it comfortably outpaces BlackRock, the largest asset manager in the world. At its peak, BlackRock became the first asset manager to steward $10 trillion in assets in Q4 2022, but this has fallen to $8.59 trillion as of Q4 2023.
Oh, only $8.59 trillion.
It wouldn't surprise me if all that was just paid in legal fees when BlackRock was in litigations against BlackRock. That was literally a thing. BlackRock against BlackRock in litigation. Whatever. Another day, another crypto scammer brought into the light by blockchain sleuth Zach XBT. Okay. Oh, please follow Zach XBT. He's awesome. Here's that tweet from Zach. Another day, another influencer at DannyCrypt dumping on their followers undisclosed. He received 2% of the supply to assist with marketing, but within 50 minutes of receiving the tokens, market dumped the majority of them for $57,000, approximately 31 ETH. Independent Ethereum educator Anthony Sassano called Ethereum staking up only on Wednesday. And there's a tweet from Sasso. The network, there are now more active validators live on the Ethereum network than there were before staking withdrawals were enabled. It took less than 2 months for this to happen. ETH staking is up only. Interesting. Retired ExxonMobil executive Tom Glass, who is currently seeking the Republican nomination for State House District 17, broke news that Texas lawmakers voted overwhelmingly in favor of an update to the state's Bill of Rights to include the right of the people to own, hold, and use digital currencies. Finally, on Thursday, Web3 law experts Meta Lawman wrote up a thread explaining just how important the news is that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce filed an amicus brief in support of Coinbase's ongoing court petition to get the securities regulators to clarify its ruling, to clarify its rules. And that, CryptoNauts, is the end of this week on Crypto Twitter.
Twitter crypto, yay. Okay, well, that's actually quite a lot of stuff. Moving on to this week in coins. Bitcoin and Ethereum lead market pullback. Sorry, let me read that again. Bitcoin and Ethereum lead market pullback as dollar rises. Oh, yeah? So they went backwards against the dollar because they're not subject to the dollar? Despite a small midweek growth spurt on news that the U.S. Department of Labor's inflation readings were lower than expected, Bitcoin and Ethereum entered the weekend with moderate losses over the last 7 days. Bitcoin was down 8% and trades around 26,817, although it's definitely over 27 as of right now. Even with the news the Principality of Liechtenstein will soon accept as payment for state services could not stop the biggest cryptocurrency by market capitalization from posting a larger loss than Ethereum this week. Bitcoin has had to compete with the rising dollar this week. The cryptocurrency typically has an inverse relationship with the dollars, so the latter's rise over the last 2 days was manifested in a pullback in Bitcoin's value. The use of Bitcoin for Ordinals NFTs also appears to be slowing down. Really? Wow, that's amazing. And with trading volume dropping by 50% on May 11th and remain far short of its range throughout most of May, although to the Dune dashboard of blockchain analyst Domo. Bitcoin transaction fees also hit a brief two-year high, as we mentioned actually on Wednesday. On Tuesday, when the average price hit $31.14, according to data by BitInfoCharts, the figure is now back under 10. Ethereum dipped 5.8% over the last 7 days and currently changes hands at around 1,800. It's one of the lighter dips in a week where, broadly speaking, the damage was light across the market. Cryptocurrencies that dipped more than 8% this week include Polygon, which fell 11.5% to 0.856058, like anybody cares about it that deep into it. Avalanche dropped 11% to 15.01. Toncoin sank 11.5% to 1.85. And Internet Computer, ICP, dropped 9.2% to trade at 516. On Monday, American crypto exchange Bittrex filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Sad. The news comes weeks after the Securities and Exchange Commission charged the company with failing to register as a broker-dealer exchange and clearing agency, and said that the agency netted $1.3 billion in illicit revenue between 2017 and 2022. Back in March, Bittrex said it was winding down U.S. operations, with CEO Richie Lai citing that, quote, the current U.S. regulatory and economic environment, end quote, as reasons for the decision. Kind of sounds like why Coinbase is leaving the country. At a hearing in Washington on Wednesday, Republican and Democrat lawmakers failed to find common ground, as they almost always do, over the extent to which new regulation is needed for digital assets. Their main difficulty is deciding whether a token should be considered a security or a commodity. If the former, then regulatory jurisdiction would be given to the SEC. If the latter, it would go to the Commodities Future and Exchange Trading Commission, CFTC. The same day, Texas lawmakers voted overwhelmingly in favor of an update to the state's Bill of Rights, which we talked about earlier. Finally, on Thursday, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce slammed the SEC for its regulation by enforcement approach toward the digital asset industry. It filed an amicus brief, as we mentioned earlier. That is a brief in favor of support of the Coinbase in the exchange's ongoing court petition to get the securities regulator to clarify its rules. Hey, you know, Europe did this as well as UAE. Can't the U.S. do this? Probably not. The SEC, as a quote, has deliberately muddied the waters by claiming sweeping authority over digital assets while deploying a haphazard enforcement-based approach. Uncle Gary is just poking everybody. The chamber wrote, this regulatory chaos is by design, not happenstance. We all know this.
By design. I think what's going to happen is a lot of these exchanges are going to be leaving. And the government's going to come out, well, you know what? These companies, they don't even like you. We love you. We're the government. We love you so much that we're going to be willing to give you CBDCs for free. Don't worry about it. Here you go. It's a stipend for just being beautiful.
Well, as we said, Uncle Gary was previously quite in favor of what was going on in the industry, and as soon as it became a federal government shill, he went against that. I'm sure there's a man of his word doesn't just change unless he fears the loss of his job.
Exactly. He's just doing his job.
Mm, yeah. Anyways, moving on to the suffering Ethereum network.
Oh, yes. Here we go. Ethereum network suffers finality issues. Here's what that means, which this article actually does not even answer that. It just explains that there was an issue with finality on Ethereum. So it goes on. Here goes. Ethereum, the world's second largest blockchain by cryptocurrency market cap, suffers a technical issue on Friday, causing its network to halt finalizing blocks for more than an hour. Finality takes roughly 15 minutes, and finality is based off of the amount of blocks and how many of them need to be compounded before those blocks can no longer be reverted, reorganized, or redistributed, or canceled, or reversed, or redistributed to another wallet. So that's a really awesome security feature that blockchain has across pretty much all blockchains. All blockchains, when they have this built into it, that's a beautiful, beautiful mechanism, right? And you want finality to happen, so there's no, issues going on. Anybody trying to hack into the network or into the blockchain, trying to do reversing transactions or reverse reorgs and stuff. But Ethereum, being the second largest crypto, you know, on the market cap around the world, it's quite unusual that you have this finality issue. That means that these transactions are literally pending. And it's like more like for example, it's like me handing Jake cash, right? For example, cash. We're gonna use cash for example. I put cash on the table, right? But Jake's not there, so I leave cash on the table. It's technically pending. It's there. I'm paying him for, for a taco. It's there, right? And it's not finalized, you know. And on top of that, you know, it's not pushed into the ledger with more transactions behind it, securing that network or securing that initial transactions even more, right? Because every block kind of secures the one before it even more. Anyways, I don't know if that was a good way to explain it.
I think it's good enough.
That's what came to mind. That's pretty much what nobody knows what happened here. And apparently it's been happening a few times already. And they don't know how to fix it. They don't know what's going on here. It says ETH beacon chain finality has now failed for over an hour. We're at inactivity leak time. And there is no denying this is now a liveness fault. Hoping that it was just an implementation issue for a single client to fix and not a large protocol issue. Either way, not good. That's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. That was from what, Adam? Adam Cochran. Yep. We don't know, man. This is not good. Not good at all. Yeah. It might be due to the fact I can only think off the top of my head. Finality, I'm guessing that there are just so many transactions in stuck on the mempool that I don't know. Actually, I don't know. Because finality means that obviously the transaction has already gone through, right?
Right.
It just hasn't been finalized.
Yep.
And so you got this pending. I think there was an image here. Where's that screenshot at? Right here. Yeah, it's from Adam Cochran. You can see right here. It's circulating. It's calculating. And it's just pending there. Just stuck. You got these transactions in this block. 200,754. And there's a bunch of transactions in there, obviously. It's not finalized. You got to wait.
Yeah, it just gets stuck at calculating. It's like it goes up, and it's just stuck.
That's not good, dude.
Which of these people is not doing the validation? But they don't know, and that's the problem. So,
and that might be an issue for proof of stake. I'm not saying it is, but it might be.
Yep. So, anyways, there was. I want to make a comment on this as a side that there was another article that came up not long after this. It's a different group that's going to be doing like a secondary staking authority to make it just doubly secure. And they're saying that they can guarantee there would never be any 51% attacks. I don't know how they're going to do that, but they seem to think that they can. It's like a doubling down of the same coin onto the same network. And it's called EigenLayer. So the EigenLayer is supposedly something that can help fix this problem. I don't know that it actually has, and I'm not sure EigenLayer has been implemented. But if it has, maybe that will stop this weird finality issue. So, moving on to other news. Ancient Bitcoin changes wallet after 12 years dormant. Wait, what? So far, this year, over 3,000 Bitcoin from an ancient supply. Ancient. It sounds funny to say it's ancient. It's not over 30 years. It's just 12 years. Anyways, has returned to life. Asleep for ages, more sats wake from years of... You know why, right? It has to do with ordinals. I'm sure it does.
I was going to say that, dude. I'm pretty sure.
People are like, we want the originals. Somebody go wake up that sleeping Bitcoin wallet and dump some ordinal or some Satoshi so we can write ordinals to them. Anyways, so Bitcoin bought in 2011 came back to life on Thursday when 139 Bitcoin belonging to an address H1AB6 moved into a newly created SegWit address. The owner, who hodled for nearly 12 years, bought the coins June 2011 for a little over $2,250, only to see them grow to a staggering $3.5 million.
I was really hoping that they did not write this article on me, but it is what it is. I guess that's my confession. There you go.
They're writing it about you. Did you buy? You didn't buy in 2011, did you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's several years before I did. I didn't get into any of this until 2014. John's got some OG Bitcoin. In any case, So just basically saying that there's some really old Bitcoin moving around from way back in yesteryear, back in the last decade, beginning of last decade.
It says October 2010 was when the wallet was created, and at that price, Bitcoin was 19 cents, bro. That's crazy.
It's only crazy to us now, because back then, I mean, I will say that when I got into Bitcoin, it was in the hundreds of dollars price range.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
I couldn't afford very much of that at the time anyway, so I bought what I could. And just finding Bitcoin, just finding a place to buy Bitcoin was like, if you could, and you know, because you've been there, but the, what's it called? The kiosks, you know, the ATMs that were out, that existed, and they were, because I lived in Silicon Valley at the time. Mm-hmm. They had a huge markup. Like the one that I went to, which is, I was in Burlingame or something, just south of San Francisco. And I got there, and I think to buy one Bitcoin was nearly double the price. And I was just like, I just don't want to pay. And I think it was like, at the time, Bitcoin was like $230 a coin. And I was just like, I don't really want to pay $400 for $230 worth of Bitcoin. It just didn't, sit well with me. So I didn't end up buying it. Not that I knew it was going to be worth anywhere close to $25,000 or more. No one did.
So you did mention ordinals, and this article doesn't actually say why they're moved, but it's possible that they're moved so they can check every single one of those satoshis through a bot that checks the serial number of the satoshis, and maybe they can sell off a few of these satoshis, which is amazing that you can actually sell a satoshi more than an entire Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane, dude. Yep. That's
a crazy. one hundred millionth of a Bitcoin. For
sell that fraction for one Bitcoin.
I think
that's
the actual current price of a satoshi. I usually use btcsatoshi.com to look it up. One satoshi is currently worth, at least in dollars, $0.0002 or 0.02 cents. So basically 1/50th of a penny is the price of a satoshi. So if you're paying 10 grand for 1/50th of a penny, you're nuts. But you know, someone's
going to.
People
want this, man.
People are willing to pay for that. Then
they want the pizza.
They want the pizza coin. Yes, they want the pizza Bitcoin.
The Silk Road coins.
Yep.
They want pretty much any major event that happened in Bitcoin history.
Yep. Yeah. Well, remember we talked about it. Was it 26,000 Bitcoin he used to pay for the pizza? How many was it?
It was way more than that. I think it was like 50,000.
50,000? Okay, well, that's a lot. Because, I mean, that's 50,000 times 100 million. There's an immense number of Satoshis in there. But people are probably trying to find just the first Satoshi in his purchase.
10,000, sorry, 10,000.
10,000, okay. 10,000 yeah. Bitcoin. So, yeah.
Laszlo. This is his name, Laszlo.
Yep. So, anyways, yeah. Pardon?
Next news article.
Yeah, let's move on to Assassin's Creed.
Assassin's Creed. Smart collectibles pair NFTs with 3D printed physical items. I love physical items, especially NFT physical items. They're so awesome. I have a few of them here in the closet that maybe one of these days I'll bring them out and show you guys what I have. So Ubisoft has been around in the Web3 space for a couple of years, and they've been pretty proactive on promoting blockchain-based gaming. And this article here is talking about what they're doing. Their next phase is making NFT physical collectibles, which is cool. Now they have Assassin's Creed's, and they're calling it Assassin's Creed's Smart Collectibles, which they're going to integrate an NFC chip within their physical Assassin's Creed's. Let me show you an image here. It's hard to explain. This image here, let's see, it's a crystal clear cube with one of the characters, the Assassin's Creed characters, inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then within this cube, there's an NFC chip that has a unique asset address attached to this particular physical unit, which is awesome. That means you have a one-of-one, a physical one-of-one, one of these, dude. These are awesome.
Yep. It's embedded, cool. So I mean, I guess technically you could break the thing to get it out, but the problem is if you break it, then it's not, you know, not worth the same amount.
Yeah, you know, that would be stupid. Exactly. Anyways, that's that on that here. I've been trying to tinker with that for a while, the NFC, and with my book, I've been trying to get that to work. But I'm still working on it.
Embedded in the spine of the book.
Yeah.
So yeah. NFTs, as much as the gaming community seems to have a real aversion to NFTs in gaming, I just think that it was poorly implemented by those who did it. Obviously, Ubisoft is really into this, and they're the ones almost leading the charge herein. But, I mean, we've already talked about Sui, and that's just a platform. But
when it comes to AAA game developers, obviously, Sui is just a platform. But then you have Ubisoft, which is the AAA game developer that's developing these games. And then you have Square Enix that's making, like, Final Fantasy games, you know, RPG games.
Right.
These are AAA game developers that are going to invest hundreds of millions of dollars into these Web3 games. You know, that's going to be really awesome.
Yeah, the trading, the weird trading factors that go along with this isn't necessarily so bad, but the functional movement from with, like I said, if you played a character within like an RPG or even an MMORPG for a really long time, and at some point you're ready to just give up on it because you're done, or even if you just died and want to give it to your kids, right? You can then move that thing that you spent so much time working and developing and maintain it. It's weird that people look down upon this as invalid. You're like, the reference point I'm going to bring up, and people have probably seen this either on Twitter or YouTube or some, or like TikTok or something, where the guy has been playing his game, whatever it happens to be, for, you know, 3 or 4 years, maybe 10 years, and his girl just decides to wipe out all his progress on his game. And it's like, the equivalent I would bring it to, and even though I know people look at this as this digital stuff, it's like, well, it's digital, who gives a crap, right? It's not physical at all. But there are plenty of things we do that aren't physical that have the equivalent. If you're putting a lot of time and a lot of effort into a thing, regardless of whether or not it's physical or not, to me, even though I realize that him taking her clothing and just burning it all or selling it all for that matter, is effectively equivalent, because it's like you spend a lot of time and money building that up, and if you just go delete it, you just don't recognize the true value of it. So with an NFT, you can't just go delete it. It's on the blockchain. You have to delete the whole blockchain to get rid of it. So in that sense, games on the blockchain would have permanency, and no one could actually just randomly go in there and delete your entire game progress. So
that's what I love about it, dude. That's what I love about it.
It's not the only thing that's great about it, but it's definitely one thing. There would be no, I mean, I guess a person could say, I sold all your NFTs, fine. But the fact of the matter is they'd still exist.
Yeah. But, you know, that's why I got into Ethermon early on. And that's why I'm really into DeFi Kingdoms, because of that. I'm literally building up my character, and it's really cool to see them evolve.
Yeah. And they're there regardless of whether the game exists. Now, of course, the game doesn't exist anymore. You can't really play it anymore. But at least you have proof that you did. So
the NFTs will continue to be there.
Yes.
Say, for example, the game server goes offline.
Yep. Yeah, but see, someone could build another game server, and then you could be then again use your NFT. So, anyways, last article of the evening here. CleanSpark eyes expansion plans ahead of Bitcoin halving. So you guys know that the current value of a Bitcoin is 6.25 per block mined. And when it halves, is it early next year or is it end of this year?
It's next year.
It's going to go down to 3.125, which is still a lot. Now, of course, if the price goes up, it'll be worth more. And most likely it will. We've seen that happen in the past. But why is this company important? Well, they're just trying to kind of, you know, beat the value to the punch. CleanSpark assured investors its Q2 earnings call that it is both growing rapidly and focusing on efficiency. They're adding 65,000 machines to their lineup.
Yep.
Quite a number of machines. And, I mean, they already have 16 exahash worth of production value, which is quite a bit. And there is obviously along these lines a consideration for what the executive group in the U.S. Legislature is considering adding a 30% tax to all major users of power for the sake of mining. That's going to add a huge consideration or concern, because we already talked about, you know, Coinbase leaving the country to try to find greener shores. Well, the same thing's going on here is, well, you know, maybe CleanSpark and whomever else is doing Bitcoin mining will probably also leave. We actually mentioned, you know, Vietnam being a place where a lot of people are going just because mm-hmm. so many large countries are closing up the allowance for mining. You know, China did it several years back, and it looks like the U.S. is trying to do it, but I think it just has to do with people who are pansies when it comes to competition. So,
you call them pansies?
Well, I'm talking about the people who kind of convince the exec that is the president in the United States.
Bunch of pansies.
To implement this policy to tax the miners over the power that they're using. Yes, it is probably one of the largest power consumption industries in the United States. But when we were producing automobiles using easily the same amount, if not more, electricity, no one complained there. So, is Bitcoin making something of value? Absolutely, it's making something of value. We as crypto enthusiasts would always say that. But the value is taking the power back from literally everyone else. I mean, yes, there are plenty of wealthy people who own Bitcoin, but they don't own the network. They just own some of the coin on the network. No one controls Bitcoin. So, I mean, like I said, you can own a lot of it. Obviously, Michael Saylor does, but no one controls the Bitcoin network. It is entirely independent. It's not controlled by the U.S. government, even though the U.S. government may own a lot of Bitcoin. Yeah, it's neat to see that they're preparing for the next halving by adding more machines, and it's just going to be interesting to see where the price of Bitcoin goes. Because almost every single time we have a halving, the price goes up right before the halving.
Mm-hmm. So, which is right around the corner, man. It's coming up real quick, so start stacking sats.
Yep, continue to stack sats. Do good with it. Dollar cost averaging, buy a little bit all the time. Just, you know, even if it's $5 a week or a month or something, just keep adding more to it. Because in a sense, and this is the thing I find funny as a kind of a parting note here, the wealthiest people in the country don't have their wealth in dollars in the United States. They have their wealth in assets. That should tell you something. They don't keep their money in dollar format like a lot of us tend to do. They keep, and I'm not talking about buying a car. A car is not an asset. It's a liability. So I'm talking about what do they do? They tend to put it into investments like land, like companies, something where your money goes to work for you. Just keeping the cash itself. Cash itself loses value due to inflation. So, I mean, if you just put $100 in the bank, its actual $100 value decreases with time, unless you're getting interest on it. Right now, of course, the United States has really high interest because they're trying to force everybody to save instead of spend. But even so, the still the most valuable thing you could ever put a large amount of money into is land. Obviously, it's kind of hard to buy, you know, an acre for $100. I don't think you can do that anywhere in the U.S. anymore. But
that's why you buy it from that metaverse that you play.
Right. But that's one of the ways you can do it, is putting it into something that's not going inflationary like the U.S. dollar is. So CleanSpark is investing in something good, which is mining the very coin that will continuously hold its value indefinitely. One Bitcoin is equal to one Bitcoin.
Renewable energy credits.
Yep. So with that, that cleans up for the week. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate your patronage. If you would like to contribute to our furthering of our show, we appreciate your assistance. And you can always donate to us in multiple forms of coin, like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Binance, BAT, Raven, Doge, Tron, Litecoin, Monero, and Matic, or otherwise known as Polygon. You can also check us out on Odyssey and on Twitch if you're not always watching us there, as well as YouTube. You can see our posts on Twitter, and you can join us in Discord at any time. We'd love to have you. You can also contribute to our furtherance of our show through Patreon, where you can actually catch pre- and post-show content, as well as additional content you would normally get on the channel. You can, if you want, we got PayPal and Buy Me a Coffee as well. Also, check us out on the Spotify podcast, which is now the audio-only version. It used to be Anchor, now it's Spotify. And we want to finish out this by saying, yes, as we did at the beginning of the show, Blockchain Expo is coming up on the 17th and 18th next week. That's Wednesday and Thursday. We will be there streaming live pretty much all day, both days, and into the evening on Wednesday. It will be a lot of stuff going on. Hopefully we'll be able to hit everybody there and get a lot of interviews and a lot of contacts. It's going to be exciting. We know a lot of these people already, so it's going to be fun to see a lot of people we saw last October again. If you guys want to come out to the show, it's free for anybody who'd like to see it. Lots of great talks and lectures given at these, I think it's 6 different stages they have inside the auditorium. So come on down and check out Blockchain Expo. And then what did you want to talk about, John?
That's it. Let's wrap it up.
All right. Well, we'll hope to see you guys after the expo. We will be streaming live on Wednesday, but we will not be having a podcast on Wednesday evening. So sorry to be missing that out, but you guys can catch us again in kind of a recap on the following Sunday. With that said, Stacksats and Hoddle, adios.